Is it helpful to put love and law together in the same sentence? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson. We continue our series on the Book of James. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Pedrito Maynard Reed, both from the School of Theology at Walla Walla. And I'd like to start by addressing that question. Love and law seem to be in such different worlds. One sounds so nasty and restrictive, law, and love sounds so flexible and loose. What does it mean when you put them together?
The law question is raised by the person who is trying to get out of the scenario that James is condemning in the first part of chapter 2. In verse 8, he says, if you fulfill the royal law, you love your neighbor as yourself. He's quoting them. They're saying, but we love our neighbor, you know. And he says, but if you show partiality, you are just as damned. And he's adding a 11th commandment to what I call the 11th commandment of showing partiality. It's emphasis on those who are not showing true religion are showing partiality. They're and partiality to the rich. And we want to come back to the rich, because here are a group of people who take care of the rich. They come into a synagogue, not a Christian meeting. I make that clear. The actual word there, you come into the synagogue. And I also argue that it's a court scene, because the synagogue was used for litigation, and there are rabbinic texts that shows exactly this same illustration. You come into the synagogue, into the court setting in the synagogue, and one is in dirty clothes and one is well-dressed. Therefore, attention will be paid to the one that is well-dressed, and they will get redressed by the court. And or one makes sit down and one has to stand up. And the courts of the many rabbis said, no, they must dress equally, so there is no partiality shown, or they must either sit together or stand together so that justice is blind. But there were people who were not doing that. They were always taking care of the powerful and the rich. And those who were poor and oppressed, the widows and the orphans, they were going against them. And James is so very strong against the rich, who is causing most of the suffering of the poor, dragging them into courts for debts and all of that. And he really blasts them. And he now blasts the people who are showing them deference. But they say, but we have to, no, we can't, we have to show we're loving them. Don't the law says we must love them? And then James comes down there and he says, but if you show partiality, you commit sin. You are convicted by the law. The focus on law is because he's saying you are showing partiality, which is one of the law. And he sees it as such a serious law. He equates it with adultery and murder.
But let me interrupt you.
So what has changed? It seems to me that this issue is very alive today.
Oh.
If you have the wherewithal to hire the big lawyers and stuff,
that's
the
exactly
kind of
right.
justice you get is very different from the ordinary person who cannot afford that.
And James is on the side of the weak. That's why he verse 127. He says true religion gets on the side of the weak. And today, like back then, it's the weak, they don't get justice.
So he's not here speaking against being wealthy. In other words, James doesn't think being wealthy is evil.
Back then, yes.
Yes.
In the context, there was no wealthy good person.
In
James' mind, in first century. This is why my dissertation was done on a social, historical description.
Now, you're going to have to say more about that. What do you mean there was no good rich people?
There was no good rich person.
Now, wait a minute. You've got Nicodemus, you've got Joseph of Arimathea.
Everyone that came to Jesus, including Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus came to Jesus. He said, all my goods, the half of my goods, and if I owe anybody else, I will pay them back fourfold. That means...
So why were they not good? Because they got their wealth by unjust
all
means?
By oppression. And that is, and I demonstrate that in all my writings, that they all got it by oppression. And when Nicodemus came and Joseph of Arimathea came in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4 said, all that they had, they made available to the entire church. That means they shared it all. What was the problem with the rich ruler in chapter 18 of Luke? And you notice chapter 18 is a rich ruler, chapter 19 is Zacchaeus. He could not give away. He could not share. Christianity called for that time for sharing because all wealth came in by oppression. So you could not be rich and be good.
By unjust and harsh dealings.
Now, can wealth be obtained by non-harsh dealings today? Of course it can be. You can, you know, will all your stuff to me and you die and I still have it. but back then, that was not the way that wealth was.
So society was so structured that it was only by the exploiting people that you could acquire wealth.
Absolutely. So if you read, that's why I came back to the point.
That's a blanket statement, Pedrito, but I'm going to take it
with
a grain of salt.
That's why I spent that time studying it. Why is James so harsh? Why is Jesus so harsh?
He quotes this passage from Leviticus, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But just before that, you have this remarkable statement that says, you shall not render an unjust judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great. And here James is being partial to the poor.
That's exactly right. Every context must be understood. Here, when the Leviticus statement was made, as it talked about how society was going to be run, yes, but in this society, they were all oppressing the poor. And James is not going to modify it and make it softer to please us. We didn't like it, so we didn't even quote from it for two centuries and had a hard time getting in the canon because we think that James was talking to me today. He's talking to me today. If I will not take care of those that are in need, and if I am gaining my wealth via oppression.
So he sounds a little bit, is it like Amos?
He's exactly like Amos. He's exactly like Micah.
Amos basically says you have unjust weights, the sky is going to fall in on the
world. Amos and Micah and Hosea and Isaiah, the 4 centuries of the 4th century, of the 8th century, when there was a lot of wealth. God sent 4 prophets, the endless century that he sent 4 prophets, and all 4 prophets constantly condemned the wealth. The only thing they condemned more was idolatry. Everything else they condemned was the wealthy. Mm. And James is in that same of ballpark.
Yeah, I remember the first time I read Amos as an adult, it was like I thought this was a man who was breaking down the door, telling you your house is on fire. Get out.
Hosea in chapter 4 even talks about, he calls the women cows of Basham. The wealthy women who are pulling their husbands to get more money and to just oppress the poor. They blast them. Come now, let us reason together in chapter 1 of Isaiah. In the whole context is that you don't care for the poor and the widows. You come with your sacrifices and your orphans.
James is up on his high horse.
He's huge.
Yeah.
Huge. So he doesn't want to soften it at all. That's why he doesn't say anything. And most of our lesson this week and in a couple of weeks' time is going to be spent on, but aren't there rich people in the Bible? Because we want to be rich. We all, even the poor,
Job
want to be rich.
Job was very rich.
So we don't want to hear the word of James that says, if you are oppressed and if you're not taking care of the poor, something is wrong. And we just have to allow James to speak.
Yeah. Nobody likes a prophet, you know.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to slip down to the last verse in this section.
Yeah.
Because it seems, again, James is caught in a very awkward situation. He says, for judgment will be without mercy to anyone who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Now, that last sentence seems to contradict the sentence just before it. If mercy triumphs over judgment, then why does he say judgment will be without mercy? Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. He's talking to those folks again who are powerful, who are treating the rich in powerful ways. Remember now, he just finished in verse 10. Keep one. If you fail in one point of the law, you're accountable of all. Mm-hmm. Which let me just stop a moment to say, that text is not talking about the Sabbath. Although we do use that text to say, if you break the Sabbath, you break all the commandments. It can be applied to tell people that they need to keep the Sabbath. But that's not the primary meaning. The primary meaning of that text is that if you show partiality and he's so strong against people showing partiality to the rich, that he's saying judgment will come upon you. And it is as if you kill somebody and they hung you, or you commit adultery and they kick you out of the church. He's saying showing partiality is in that level. And judgment will come, and it will be coming upon you without any mercy if you don't do that. All right.
So that's not a universal statement, then. It's applicable to that particular circumstance.
It is talking about all of this passage is talking about this one context. We cannot read this text through the lens of Paul, through the lens of the Old Testament, through the lens of anything. He's talking as a pastor preaching a sermon to a particular people in a particular context. I still think
that Brother James would be a very difficult man to live with, almost as difficult as living with Elijah.
And again, if you were on the side of the powerful, you would not like him. You would stone him.
If you were on the side of the oppressed, you would love him.
You would love him. You would love him.
You would tell him, come stay at my house and preach from my front step, man.
But he says mercy will triumph over judgment. Again, if you show mercy to these people who are suffering, guess what? There's no judgment for you.
That does make sense, Pedrito.
It's a beautiful passage. But if you are in the business of caring for people and helping people, let me tell you, this text doesn't bother you. If you're in the business of trying to make it in life and be as wealthy as possible and to walk over everybody, you don't love this. It's dangerous.
So is there no way that we can touch the hearts and win these wicked rich people?
James never intended that. As a matter of fact, James was writing like the prophets of old who would condemn Edom and Syria and Egypt and Babylon. They never intended to convert any of those people.
Well, except that they had a Nineveh experience where they heard the announcement of judgment and they repented.
Yeah, but that's Jonah.
Yeah, but
these are the prophets. They just condemn them.
I'm saying is that their preaching may have had that consequence.
If it turned around. So James wasn't addressing those people, and for them there was no hope. He was addressing the poor who were really oppressed, and for them that was comforting.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing.
Well, I think I'm planning to have a good long conversation with Brother James, because it seems to me that he could have been just a bit more balanced. But we live in a different time and place.
He had a great injustice to address, and when you have that, you're not really balanced.
You're not really balanced, okay. No. All right. Next week, we come with which is probably the most challenging section here. And Pedrito, we are going to work you like mad to get as much from you as possible. It's the faith and works section, James 2, 14 to 26. So my thanks to both of you, and my thanks to David Olson, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in for the good word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.